other territories in the world, not only for captive labor, but also for free resources and also captive markets. And so it was that way that you had the development of Anglo-Saxon supremacy throughout the world. But China is pushing back the clock on all of that, and the world is returning to a more natural economic equilibrium. So the United States is doing everything it can to try and push that back, with the US military industrial complex leading the way. So TikTok fits in very clearly into that order of events, and it is really swept up as a moral panic, this idea of TikTok corrupting children, for one, but also to TikTok supposedly being a site of foreign espionage. Yeah.
No, indeed. Well, look, we'll come back to our discussion in a moment, because we've got another report now about TikTok's links to a pro-Israel company, which in turn is linked to the CIA.
The idea that China is spying on US citizens via TikTok becomes even more ridiculous when you discover that the data gathered by the company in the United States has actually been diverted to pro-Israel CIA cutout company Oracle as part of a massive deal known as Project Texas. The Oracle company was founded by Larry Ellison in 1977. The firm adopted the name of a CIA operation, and the first service it provided was helping the intelligence agency build a database. Oracle later hired David Carney to head its Information Assurance Center. Carney had previously been the third highest ranked employee at the CIA, where he had worked for 32 years. Today, Oracle is the world's second biggest IT software company, and Larry Ellison is the seventh richest person in the world. He is still the top shareholder in Oracle and works as the chief technology officer, as well as sitting as the executive chairman of the company, despite passing the role of CEO to Israeli Safra Katz. Larry Ellison was also instrumental in Elon Musk's bid to buy Twitter, providing him with $1 billion to pursue his takeover. Less well known is the closeness of Ellison and, in fact, the whole company to Israel. Over a period of a decade, Ellison donated over $26 million to the Israeli military. The current CEO of Oracle has explicitly stated the company's pro-Israel bias. Safra Katz exclaimed, "We're not flexible regarding our mission, and our commitment to Israel is second to none. If our employees don't agree with our mission to support the state of Israel, then maybe we aren't the right company for them. Larry and I are publicly committed to Israel." The extent of the company's relationship with Israel is even more clearly seen in the report that Ellison even offered Netanyahu the position of director at Oracle. Project Texas also led to an influx of agents from the US security state into TikTok, like Rebecca Pober, who went from her post at the Pentagon to become a US policy manager at TikTok. The company's head of data public policy for Europe is Jade Nestor, who was the State Department's Director of Internet Public Policy. Another interesting individual at TikTok is recruiting coordinator Katrina Villacisneros, who was part of Army Cyber Command, the US military unit that oversees information warfare online.
I see Larry Ellison was mentioned in that report there, David. Just say a word or two, will you, about him and his links to Israel.
Well, you couldn't make this up, could you? I mean, this is the seventh richest person in the world who is the runs the second biggest IT firm in the world. And the company says that it will not even tolerate employees who think differently about the Zionist entity, and they can go elsewhere and work for another company. And the process by which they are involving themselves with TikTok is the process that they've done in many other companies. They have massive contracts, of course, in the UK as well. And what we see then is that the data which they are managing for in these contracts are this data which is, you know, which is clearly available to Israeli intelligence. So this is a massive, massive scandal. And you know, whenever we talk about this kind of thing, people say, this is nothing to do. But this is a real scandal. Mm-hmm. That actually, this is an Israeli intelligence operation to penetrate the data systems of the largest organizations in the world, including governmental organizations, which have a national security component. Mm. The fact that they're now penetrating TikTok as well as many other companies, and that they're putting in place people who are ex-US spies and from the US national security apparatus is truly astonishing. But, you know, you won't find this in the mainstream media at all.
I was going to say, where is the corporate media then?
Nowhere.
How would you explain that? I mean, it's very odd, isn't it?
That's a much longer answer you could ask me to do. But you know, the media, of course, are structurally opposed
as we've actually touched on in previous shows. But Loki, how does Oracle then go about obtaining contracts here in the UK?
Well, the interesting thing about Larry Ellison is that he is also a component of the campaign against Elon Musk and Twitter, because, of course, he borrowed Elon Musk $1 billion in order to buy the platform. In addition to that, Larry Ellison is so close to Benjamin Netanyahu that even though Ellison is supposed to be a prosecution witness in the eternally delayed corruption trial that Netanyahu must undergo when he's finished genociding Gaza, Ellison has met with Netanyahu several times on his private Hawaiian island, and he even saw to it that his own lawyer and the lawyer of Israeli intelligence agent Arnon Milchan, another supposedly prosecution witness in the trial, was given to Benjamin Netanyahu for the trial. So all manner of corruption and conflict of interest seem to be at play here. In terms of domestically, Oracle stores the data for the British Ministry of Defence, for the Home Office, for the British Foreign Office, and even for the British National Health Service. Now, the very month that Larry Ellison's company obtained this massive contract with the British government, you had the cancelling of Larry Ellison's Ellison Foundation charity, which operated here and employed the father-in-law of Boris Johnson, who was at the time the Prime Minister, as its head. And, you know, Boris Johnson's father-in-law received £500,000 wage per year from Larry Ellison's charity at the same time that Ellison was employing other British government high-ranking employees. At the same time, he was vying for a contract from the British government. To me, that's an open and shut case of conflict of interest.
Well, bit of a rhetorical question now then, David, but do you think any of the data that we've discussed is safe in the hands of Larry Ellison and Oracle?
Well, I mean, from the outside, you can say that obviously people will be sceptical of that.
Yeah,
But you know, what do we have? Do we have any kind of due diligence from the Ministry of Defence, from the Foreign Office, from the Home Office? These are, of course, the three government departments in the UK which are responsible for all of the intelligence operations of the British state, for GCHQ, MI5, MI6, and all the rest of the military intelligence as well. So this is an open and shut case of a national security problem, which the national security establishment of the UK steadfastly refuses to face. It simply won't look at it, and you've had what effectively are massive bribes to senior civil servants, and indeed to the former the Prime Minister's father-in-law. I mean, this is an extraordinary situation. Mm. There should be a public inquiry on this in the UK, but there's not a whiff of it anywhere in public debate.
No, indeed. So, I mean, it's not only the media falling down on the job, but the politicians who are supposed to be holding these sort of organisations to account.
And the intelligence agencies. The intelligence agencies should be leading an investigation of this.
Sure, indeed. Well, Loki, I mean, are we seeing an antagonism developing, do you think, in the relationship between China and Israel?
Well, this is a fascinating question, Chris, because immediately after October 7th, the Chinese government refused to condemn the operation. In addition to that, Israel, since the beginning of its genocidal campaign in Gaza, has charged that China is unofficially operating sanctions against Israel on the dual-use civil and military exports, which normally are sent from China to Israel because they just haven't been coming in. Now, supposedly, there is a bureaucratic reason behind it, but Israel is convinced that China is targeting it. In addition to that, when Israel cancelled the work permits of 65,000 Palestinian construction workers in the aftermath of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, what you saw was Israel seeking to fill that gap with 100,000 Chinese workers. The Chinese government then banned its citizens from going and working in Israel. We know that around 30,000 Chinese citizens were working in the Zionist entity prior to October 7th. At least 20,000 of them have left. And what we also know is that during this time, perhaps as revenge for the unofficial sanctions issue, you have seen the Israeli port of Haifa, which previously was controlled by a Shanghai corporation. The Chinese had invested a huge amount of resource in developing the Haifa port. It's now, during this period, fell 70% under the control of an Indian billionaire. So there certainly is some level of antagonism developing within the Israel and China dynamic, for sure.
Well, David, I mean, what sort of impact then do you think there would be with a kind of fallout in the relationship between China and Israel in the region there?
Well, we already know what some of the impacts have been. We already know that the Chinese brokered the deal between Iran and the Saudis, which also helped to end the conflict in Yemen,
yeah,
and put Yasser Arafat in the position of being able to enforce a boycott of an embargo on the Red Sea. We already know that the Chinese have been behind the overtures between the Syrian government and the Saudis, and indeed by Hamas and the Saudis, and indeed with Hezbollah and the Saudis. These are all massive changes in the region, which mean that the region is moving away from having to separately fight Israel, and indeed are moving in a direction which means that China will increasingly come to be seen on the side of what effectively is the resistance axis. Now, it's not doing that openly as yet, but the overtures it's making are having the consequence that actually fighting between the Arab nations is being decreased, and that of course means that there will be probably an increased confrontation with the Zionist entity.
Another indication, perhaps, of the end of the unipolar world and the emergence of the multipolar world, something we'll probably have to come back to on another show, because unfortunately we are right out of time for today. So thank you to our guest Lo Ki, and of course our resident expert Professor David Miller. So until next time, when Palestine Declassified, we'll be back with more forensic investigations and analysis. This is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we will be exploring the Islamic upbringing of children and youth, guided by the wisdom of the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed some light on this important subject. Salaamu Alaikum, Sister Salma, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Alaikum Salaam wa Rahmatullahi wa Barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
So we've been discussing this question for a few episodes, and you know about how to guide the teenage son, especially before they grow up and before it's too late.
Yeah.
And you gave some very nice important points where, you know, you mentioned about trustworthiness, truthfulness, grateful to parents, like how to inculcate all of these characteristics in the child. And the last point we have been discussing was, you know, how to instill not getting attracted to this world and the worldly things in easily, and material stuff, which at times is very difficult. So you've been mentioning that. Do you have anything more to say about that, or should we go to the next point?
Yeah, we go to the next point now. The next point is wasting time and money. It's important to inculcate that to a young child when he grows up at about maybe 12, 11, 12,
yeah.
When you start giving him some pocket money to choose, maybe buying his stuff or maybe for school or something like that. You have to really gently explain him that this money doesn't come by easy and you don't have to waste it or, just lose it. Sometimes this child is so careless that he just puts aside his money and loses it, or it's being stolen or stepped, things like that. Or not to waste it. For example, waste in buying things that are unnecessary, or keep on buying things that, use to what you require and need.
Yeah.
And also you at the same time, don't go to places where your daughter or son feels that you're shopping every day.
Yeah.
Some mothers have this habit that they want to shop the best clothes and they keep on shopping, and then the child asks, but you have this at home. The child is innocent. They'll ask them, you have this, you have two of these at home.
Yeah.
Why do you want to buy? And the mother says, no, just for my own fancy. For example, I like the style of it. So the child will also learn. Yeah, when you like a style of it, you keep on buying. But that's nothing other than israf.
Yeah, and I think it's sometimes there's this fine line between wasting and kind of thinking that this is not important. So, for example, I remember there was a time when I was young, when I used to, like, my flash disks, I was given flash disks and it got lost. And my mom was like, it's not good. And I was like, no, this is worldly things. You don't have to care about these things. And then she was like, no, that's
yeah, exactly. Yeah, not laying importance on the things that you buy and then when it's lost, right?
Yeah,
that even is israf. In effect, that you have to buy again.
Yeah.
In the long run, you need it, right? So it's like if, for example, you iron roughly your clothes and they get burnt, it's just a worldly thing. No, it doesn't mean that you take care of it. Or you wear your shoes. In fact, our Ahlul Bayt used to have the clothes, special attire for outside and for the home wear.
Yeah.
So outside, your clothes are preserved so that you don't keep on buying other clothes. And home wear is like, they get worn out and everything. So it doesn't mean that, you keep on, you're underestimating the fact that this dunya is nothing and
everything's okay.
No, that's wasting actually. Yeah. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also says, Kulu washrabu wa la tusrifu. So eat and drink, but do not do israf. And sometimes israf can be done in also overeating, for example, as far as eating is concerned.
Yeah.
Overdoing something. So israf is not just that you for example, not do it, or it can be done.
Sometimes
doing it at all is also israf. For example, sometimes we have some food that is left over and we feel that if you don't eat it, it'll be israf. No, our stomachs will pain in the end, so that is more israf. So we have to decipher.
Yeah, very true. So we're just going to take a quick break and pick up shortly from this.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have been discussing a very important aspect to inculcate in our children, which is how to handle money. And you've been mentioning about, you don't have to waste it or uselessly spend it. And, money is actually something that we have to be careful about, and just generally to instill that in our children.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything more to say?
The last but not least is one master character trait and virtue that by observing all these things that I talked about in the previous programs and even today, some of them, is that piety will be achieved. That piety that we are working for without spelling it to be a taqwa, a piety, telling them, be pious, all these qualities will instill a piety in him, a fear of him, that what he's doing, he should be aware, he should be truthful, he should be trustworthy, he should not, he should be grateful to his parents, that Allah has given him such good parents, or parents at least.
Yeah.
He should be grateful for that, and he should be also not wasting his time, money, energy, be focused, be determined. All these things, if you go and see, gives a perfect plan for a teenager to tread on that path, that of perfection that Allah wants for him, and that his growth lies in it, and he will become successful in both worlds. So without telling, come, I teach you about piety. You know what piety is?
Yeah.
No. Teach about all these things, truthfulness, trustworthiness, like respecting parents, respecting elders. All these things come under being grateful, of course, to parents, because parents would like their children to respect elders also.
Definitely.
Being determined, having a goal, a purpose, not wasting time, money, all this together bring about the taqwa. So we as elders also, if we want the taqwa, we should practice all this, and more so teenagers, because teenagers have that aptitude of picking up very fast, being influenced. Mm. So if we they will think about it, they would, you can fool a child easily, but you can't fool a teenager or an adult. They will see your actions, that if they're doing that and their contrary is speaking something else. So we should be very careful, especially in your teenagers. If you want to start right away, we can do that without, beforehand. Like this parent, mashallah, she's very determined to do a great job on her teenager. I pray for that to happen.
Inshallah.
So she's been wanting to know beforehand.
Yeah, and I think when you see such a teenager, who has all these qualities, you kind of have a certain sort of
love and attraction,
them.
Right?
Yeah, because it's something very hard to come by, and it's something very hard. They have to have a lot of, willpower to be able to do all of this. So it's definitely.
And our scholars were like that. Imagine those tender teenagers were like that.
Yeah.
Like a great scholar of Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi. He was just 17 when he came, and how he was as a teenager, you feel, mashallah, what upbringing he must have had, that he had all those quality.
Yes.
And that's why when he passed away, he was so, mashallah, with so many good, he left behind so many good teachings and books and
definitely.
All his works.
And I think just recently we were talking to some of the, we were seeing actually a video, and they were saying, why do we have all these shuhada martyrs, streets names, and why is it so important to constantly remind yourself that, okay, this is the, they know that they live in the street, and they don't know much about that shaheed, but just this reminder that you have these kind of youth who are able to be such pure people,
accomplish such things,
and it was hard, but they managed, so we can
exactly. And they were not masoom, so if they were not, and they could, so why not us?
Definitely.
Any teenager, if he sees and is given this kind of atmosphere, will reach great heights.
Definitely.
I believe that strongly,
inshallah. So we're just going to take another short break, and we'll be back soon.
Ya muqri al-khayrat, Ya Muqri al-khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "A righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise."
Ya Muqri al-khayrat, Ya Muqri al-khayrat.
Welcome back, and we're going to pose another question where somebody has asked, "My 15-year-old daughter doesn't talk about any of her problems with me, and I can know she's going through some tough times, but she feels I'm nagging when I ask her how she's facing all these problems. How do I make her confide in me?"
When teenagers, come of that age, they suddenly become aloof.
Yeah.
Because they want their independence. It's not a wrong thing, we should allow that also. But this parent seems like she must be nagging, if that girl feels like she's nagging.
Okay.
Her daughter feels like she's nagging. Because children know when the parents are not nagging or they are nagging, right? When you keep on asking, keep on stressing, then the child will not feel like, in fact, they'll be more stubborn not to say that, yeah?
Mm.
So what teenagers, especially girls, they're soft-hearted, they need support, love, empathy, all these things are very important. So if the parent gives that quiet moment and then quickly steals the moment when the child is talking,
yeah,
finds a good moment and becomes an active listener, This is very important. Active listening. Active listening is when you're, for example, doing even something and the child wants to talk a little to you, immediately go to the child and listen to them, especially when it comes to teenagers, and especially when it comes to this girl who's 15-year-old and doesn't want to talk about anything. At some point in time, the parents will try to make them happier, maybe cook their best meal or make them laugh or, you know, become lighthearted. Even the mood of the home, you know, the atmosphere should be so lighthearted so that it penetrates in the mind and heart and not anxiety filled that you're worried, she's worried, okay, there's a kind of ice in between. Calm behavior, okay, this happens, this is normal. Then slowly they let out. As soon as they start talking, grasp the moment. Whatever you're doing, if they need you, grasp the moment. Not that, okay, now I'm doing, hold on, let me finish this ironing of mine or cooking of mine, then I'm coming to sit with you. No. Leave that aside, however urgent it might be, which is not that much urgent, I believe. Mm-hmm. Any home task cannot be that urgent. It can wait a little. And go and talk and confide so that the girl can confide. And when she sees that there's a reassurance, there's a love, there's a empathy, obviously she will even talk about it.
Yeah.
Whatever be it, even it'll be little, she won't let out, don't expect that they let out each and every detail of what they're going through. But they will at least say what's going on. Maybe she lost her friend. Maybe she fought with her friend, or maybe she was scolded by her teacher, or given warnings, or harmed by somebody, or hit by somebody. She will talk about it then. Yeah? What's bothering her? Teenagers, they have this kind of problems.
And I feel like many times the teenagers feel that, you know, the parents don't take their problem seriously, you know, like, for example, this is important to me, but if my mother just takes it lightly, or, you know, then I feel like she doesn't understand me, you know,
exactly.
Like, she doesn't get me.
But my friend understands
but
me.
Yeah, for example, others understand me. So this kind of relationship, I feel like I had a very nice relationship with my mom. She would, you know, try and understand me. She would try and be an active listener. And I felt like that is the main reason why I never fell astray, because she was constantly like there, was backing me up, you know, was giving me that support, which I felt like I was...
With somebody to understand me and love
she understands
me. And don't complain.
Definitely.
Right?
So I think that is very important. So we're going to end here, and inshallah, maybe we can expand on this in the next episode. Thank you so much for your valuable time, and we hope to see you in the next episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening. And this was IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on child upbringing. If you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parsday.ir/en under the tab COI, which is Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can also email us on englishradio@irib.ir. God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Allah, 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 Allah.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
July 12, 1983. Place Hosseinia Jamaran, Tehran. The prophets that were appointed to prophetic missions were appointed in order to cause the spirituality of the people and those talents to bloom, and that in that blossoming, they would know that they were insignificant. In addition, it was to liberate the people from the control of arrogant powers. From the start, the prophets held these two jobs, the spiritual job to extricate the people from captivity of the carnal soul, from the captivity of the self, for Satan is great, and to liberate the prophet and the oppressed from the clutches of the oppressors. These two tasks are the jobs of the prophets.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. On the subject of the holy month of Ramadan, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, God has invited us in the banquet hall of Ramadan. That is nothing except abandonment of carnal desires, egotisms, selves, and abandonment of egoisms. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi used to stress that fasting and performing prayers in the holy month of Ramadan deck and dress one's heart for attending to God's reception. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi recommended devotees and believers to strengthen themselves morally during the holy month of Ramadan. Imam rahmatullah alayhi, the world religious and spiritual leader, used to put stress on availing opportunities of self-training and self-purification on the holy month of Ramadan. He recommended devotees and believers to strengthen themselves morally during this month. According to him, the holy month of Ramadan might have been prescribed because it is a month in which the Holy Prophet has perceived the truth. And after this perception, the angels and the Holy Book of Quran have been sent down.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi.
Sallallahu alayhi.
Salli ala.
Ramadan, which is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, is a period of fasting and getting closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Fasting in Ramadan helps Muslims grow closer to God the Almighty and seek His proximity. Muslims fast from early dawn to sunset every day throughout this month, and the fast requires Muslims to abstain from food, drink, material relations, and ill conduct during the fast. Fasting, which teaches how to control and discipline our desires, also makes us learn how to say no to things that are otherwise permissible and good but are forbidden during fasting. And that is why Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh recommended us to leave our carnal desires in this month, because the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is so much in this whole month of Ramadan that man can easily quiet his or her bad habits, and that is a present from God. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
Ya estamos de regreso para seguir las conversaciones que hemos tenido.
We are now back to continue the conversation we had to learn about the Palestinian diaspora in Chile. Today I invite you to talk with Valentina Salvador Guagui, a Chilean doctor of Palestinian origin who has been working recently since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza with a group of doctors to try to help. Let's learn a little bit more about Valentina through the following video.
Un poco más sobre Valentina.
Valentina Salvador es nieta de palestinos.
Valentina Salvador is the granddaughter of Palestinians. She studied medicine and is a specialist in surgeries for oncological diseases. She learned the love of cooking from her grandmother and grew up with recipes that she still continues to prepare and that connect her with the cultural traditions of her homeland. In 2017, she traveled to Palestine as part of a program that brought together the diaspora from different continents. She returned with the memory of a kind, happy, and welcoming people who enjoyed life with simplicity despite the tensions of the occupation, the wall, and the many shortcomings. As part of the Doctor Society of Palestine, where some 300 specialists participate, they began to pressure scientific societies to play a more active role and denounce the genocide. The events, however, have led them to continue their work raising funds to send medical supplies through the Chilean embassy in Egypt. Valentina believes that not only is the lack of food and water serious, the treatments that were left unfinished, the lack of vaccines and the lack of medical care in short are also other slow and silent ways of exterminating the Palestinian nation.
De exterminar al pueblo palestino.
Hola Valentina, muchas gracias por haber aceptado esta.
Hello Valentina, thank you very much for accepting our invitation. You are third generation. On what date and for what reasons do your parents migrated here?
Acerca de la llegada de tus padres.
I'm sorry, your grandparents.
De mis abuelos, sí. Daniel, muchas gracias por la invitación. Un honor.
Well, of course, my grandparents. Daniel, thank you very much for the invitation. It is an honor to be here representing the Doctors of Palestine. Look, my family on both sides come more or less before the Nakba. It was mainly as a result of the persecutions by the Ottoman Empire. For example, my family name is Salvador. My grandfather arrived in Chile around 1910. Several of his children were born in Bet Lalal, but my grandfather was born here in Chile, in the town of Catamu, where they settled upon their arrival in Chile. On the other hand, in depth, my grandfather's wife, Victoria Issa, came to Chile directly from Palestine. Around 1929-1930, my grandfather's father arrived here with them, and from there, in the bottom line, the family has settled in this land.
Aquí hay dos eventos que es importante destacar.
Here there are two events that are important to highlight. It was around the First World War that the Palestinians arrived. Turkish Ottoman Empire decided for the first time to force the inhabitants to defend the empire in any possible wars that might arise. And they began, for the first time, to recruit the firstborn children, the eldest of each family. And that makes many Christians and also Jews send their children out of Palestine to avoid taking them to the war. In the case of the grandmother, she surely came because of the great general strike of the 29th, where the colonization process had already begun, and we were at the gates of the Nakba, but the Nakba was already planned. This is very interesting because this also generates surely the same thing that happened in your family. A generational gap. The children of that do not have much of a relationship with Palestine. They do not pass on the language, for example. And it is always the third generation that recovers Palestinianity. What was that process like? What was it that set it off? And what are you up to today?
¿Qué fue lo que lo detonó y en qué estás hoy día?
Mira, tal cual como tú dices.
Look, just like you say, it happens to me also. Well, obviously, in my parents' house, they spoke in Arabic language. And being born in Chile, they kind of had to recover everything because in Chile, things were a little different. It's just like you say, they kind of experienced Palestine in the house.
Cosa que para nosotros fue diferente.
Something that was different for us. I think I get emotional because of the topic, sorry, but I think I have returned to it. I come from a school with a lot of social sense, a lot of politics. I don't think I had ever questioned it, like where it comes from. But yes, I think it was my dad who instilled it into me. Regardless of the fact that I seldom spoke, there was always these Palestinian things in my house. Always, always. Everything had to do with it. Food, traditions. And I think this provoked my sense of curiosity to investigate what this Palestinian thing they were talking about is. So I started to investigate, to learn from history. When people spoke to me, I liked to have information and tell them what this is, what Palestine is, what is happening, because they asked me at school. Deep down, there was an important Palestinian group that would talk about the issue of Palestine, and sometimes I felt like I had to participate in such arguments. The Palestinian issue always resonated in my head. It's good, it catches my attention, because I'm the most Palestinian-like person in my generation.
In fact, you are the first to travel to Palestine.
Exactly. In 2017, I said that I really have to go. I have to see what happens. And in addition to being the most beautiful trip of my life, at the same time, it is also a very powerful trip. Encountering this reality of injustice and encountering this reality of their everyday lives are really heartbreaking. And it is sad because they are very good people, a good nation, but in the end, they are having a hard time on a daily basis. And they are used to it. They have normalized this. I have friends who have instilled resistance into their lives. They don't have the possibility of being seen. I have a group of friends who are actually marathoners called Right to Movement. And they were in Chile here recently. And the truth is that I kind of see in them a hope of getting out of this. But in the end, there is no great help for them to achieve this hope.
There's a question that I always ask here because not many people understand it. When I took my first trip, I had a very special feeling, and I want to know if you felt the same thing and how you experienced it, because here you were actually returning to a place where you have never been to.
Yes, it's very strange.
Three different facets of the Zionist project. First, some Israeli citizens are enjoying watching the genocide from a hill in the occupied territories and cheering their army doing what the Nazis did with them. It is as if it were a film made in Hollywood. Second, we see an Israeli project, a real estate project to be located in the Gaza Strip, a coastal area oriented towards the north and with tourist potential, highly desired by Western imperialists. Third, we see images of the Nakba and all the destruction and this whole plan known as the Plan Dalet to expel about 700,000 Palestinians, destroying 500 villages, and the life, history, and geography of those who had lived in this territory for centuries. Well, let's see the story on the maps to see the evolution of this, to see if, indeed, as Finkelstein said, what happened on October 7th justifies what came afterwards. Does what has happened in the last 75 years justify the complete dismantling of a fascist and neo-colonial regime like that of Israel? This is Palestine at the beginning of the 20th century, where Jews, Christians, Muslims, and atheists lived together without any problem and in absolute peace and brotherhood, with a proportion of the Jewish population close to 5%. Shortly after, in the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland in 1897, Theodor Herzl, recognized as the father of contemporary Zionism, presented his project called the Jewish State to form a Jewish national home in Palestine. Of course, the lobby carried out throughout the West, and with the main powers of the time allowing them to achieve in 1917 the Balfour Declaration, known as the formal beginning of the Palestinian tragedy. Great Britain, the current England, without having any right to do so, committed themselves to the Zionist organization and to give Palestine a group of foreigners coming from all over the world. This declaration was put into practice by an illegal immigrant that sought to change things on the ground and change the proportion of the population. In 1947, the population of Jewish religion was about 30%, but above religion, the Zionist population came in, but not only as refugees seeking support, but to start the programs of Tsarist Russia and also the Nazi Holocaust. They came to usurp everything. They made the newly born United Nations, which had been created from the failure of the Society of Nations, approved the partitions of Palestine, an organization that was established to protect the right of self-determination of the people, approved the partition of Palestine. And guess who were not invited to the meeting? The Palestinians. That is, in complete absence of the main owners of the land, they gave 55% of historical Palestine to the Zionist organization and 44% divided into three unconnected zones to the Palestinians. Clearly, there was no possibility that either of these two states would be consolidated as they were intended. Obviously, the Palestinians rejected, but Zionism also rejected it and advanced in the war of 1948 until it occupied 78% of historical Palestine in 1980. What we know today as occupied territory remained in the hands of Jordan and Egypt, but this lasted about 20 years until the war of 1967, where Israel made use of its great military power and its always strong support from the Western powers, and mainly from the United States, from Europe and Germany, tried to pay the blame for the Nazi Holocaust with Palestinian blood. They advanced on the entire territories and on the heights of the Syrian Golan and a strip of Lebanese territories that remained occupied for more than two decades. Today, after years of extermination, after years of a genocidal policy on the parts of Israel with the Oslo Agreement, the Palestinian territories are reduced to a 15% and also in the form of small bastustans without connections to each other. In such a way, they not only intend to drown the Palestinian population, but also the Palestinian economy. Now they continue encouraging or forcing in every possible way the Palestinian population to leave the place. But we Palestinians have resisted stubbornly. We have stayed on the land to which we belong, and we have no intention of abandoning this land to make way for the continuity of the neocolonial Zionist project. And that is why we today face an ongoing genocide in Gaza, because the leaders of the Zionist project have understood that the foreigners can never defeat those who have remained in this land forever. I offer you the floor. We have time for two questions, please.
Tiempo para dos preguntas, por favor.
Un saludo. Mi nombre es Jorge Avedrapo, profesor.
Greetings, my name is Jorge Avedrapo. Here is my question. It is true that the Zionists considered several options, territorial options, to carry out their projects among some Latin American countries. I mean, finally, what could happen in the future at a global level if the advance of Israel's colonial project is not stopped?
Efectivamente, Jorge, entre el primero y el cuarto congreso sionista.
Indeed, Jorge, between the first and the fourth Zionist congresses, most of them held in Basel, Switzerland, several alternatives were put into discussion, including Uganda and Chilean-Argentine Patagonia. The underlying theme was that there was no excuse that could be used to expel the inhabitants of these territories, and therefore they resorted to the myths of the biblical promise and the chosen people to sustain a colonial project like Zionism. And that is why Palestine ended up being chosen. Furthermore, if one looks at this as a projection not only of a Palestinian issue, because the problem is not only here. This is a problem of the global North-South confrontation, and therefore what happens in Palestine will have an intimate relationship with what happens in the Western Sahara, with what happens in other parts of the world, in Gualmapo, in our country, where the hegemonic classes, world imperialism, and transnational imperialism must do everything possible to protect the interests they harvest through occupying every inch of this territory and controlling every inch of the market and effectively appropriating any common property or natural resources. This strategy exists in the world. Therefore, from my humble perspective, the only possibility of reaching a just solution in Palestine is the overcoming of capitalism on a global scale.
Es la superación del capitalismo a escala global.
Hola, mi nombre es Carlota.
I am Carolina Ospina. I am president of the Luis Emilio Recovera Collection and Research Center in Zeiler. My question is, why is the word apartheid used to refer to the Israeli policy against Palestine?
El apartheid es un concepto que se utiliza.
Apartheid is a concept that is used to refer to states or societies where there are two different systems inside them. For example, in South African apartheid, where within the same country, South Africa, there was a system for whites and a system for people of African descent. This system is seen today in Palestine and also in Israel, because not only within Israel there are first and second category citizens and different systems for those who are historically Palestinian and for Israeli citizens, but things are also tough for those who have recently arrived there and have just adopted Israeli citizenship. That's because they are Zionists and have many more rights than the Palestinians who have lived in Israel since before their birth. In addition, what we are seeing today in Gaza and the West Bank is a situation where the Israelis and the occupation, the illegal occupying power, the illegal Israeli settlers have all the rights, but the Palestinians have none. That is why the word apartheid was coined, and that is why it has been expanding the possibility of everyone recognizing the Israeli occupation as an apartheid system. We must never forget that in 1974, the United Nations General Assembly decreed that Zionism was a form of racism, homologously comparable to South African apartheid. This is while, due to the changes in the correlation of forces and North American and European pressure, this resolution was annulled several decades later. But this has not annulled the spirit and essence of Zionism, that in all these years, nothing has changed.
I have mentioned it in other programs, and I reiterate it today with more force than ever. Palestine, in its 5,000 years of history, has lived only 120 years of peace. The Palestinian people consisted of an ethnic strain absolutely intercultural, composed of Jews, Christians, Muslims, atheists, belonging to diverse peoples who have settled in Palestine at some point in history. They have been there since before the first invaders arrived, and they will surely be there after the last ones leave. Today, thousands of supposed Israeli citizens have abandoned Israel because they no longer feel safe among the Palestinians. The Palestinian nation sink their legs and roots into the ground of their homeland, where they are born, grow, and die. That's because Palestine is their land. I invite you to watch this program next week to learn more about the concept of genocide in Gaza. Don't miss the next episode of A Window to Palestine. En el próximo capítulo de Ventana a Palestina.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge with Sheikh Mukhtar on IRIB English Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. Imam Ali alayhi salam in this particular book of Nahjul Balagha has various very, very important discussions, and especially for those who want to increase their insight with regards to social issues, political issues, even with regards to understanding those the social implications of certain actions and how a person needs to be careful about their actions and the society's actions, so that the right results are achieved when a person lives a certain type of lifestyle. And Imam Ali alayhi salam, in this sermon, the sermon number 185, talks about certain issues that can help a manager and a leader. And one of them is from the discussions in the 185th sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam explains certain aspects of how you should take care of your expectations in terms of the results of certain actions that you may perform or you may not perform. These expectations have to be toned and be explained well to both the person who is managing and the group that he is managing.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, أَلَا فَتَوَقَّعُوا مَا يَكُونُ مِنْ إِدْبَارِ أُمُورِكُمْ. He says, O people, expect what? Expect that definitely certain times would happen where your actions would not bear the results that you are expecting. So expect this situation. Be able to understand and be realistic about the universe, about the world around you. Because not many times you are aware of all the factors that lead to certain actions happening in the universe. And many times it is because of our own, you can say, ignorance or sometimes wrongdoing and lack of critical analysis on what to do and what not to do that leads to such things. So yes, maybe you yourself have taken, in your opinion, have taken every step necessary. But then, not all steps that you take are the necessary steps for that thing to happen. And yes, maybe sometimes we make mistakes that we are not aware of, or we are aware of but take it lightly. So he says that, فَتَوَقَّعُوا مَا يَكُونُ مِنْ إِدْبَارِ أُمُورِكُمْ. So expect this, that this will definitely happen. Not that it will certainly happen all the time. No, the possibility of such a thing to happen is there. And this is a necessary thing. The possibility is necessary. Right? That things might not go in your way, they might go in the opposite way. وَانْقِطَاعِ وُصَلِكُمْ. And you may connect things, but those connections that you make may break, may cut off. وَانْقِطَاعِ وُصَلِكُمْ. And then he goes on to say, وَاسْتِعْمَالِ صِغَارِكُمْ. And you might reach a situation whereby in the